Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Told the receivers earlier in the week, just like Michigan, it's going to be a physical game on the outside, and when anybody puts their hands on you during the week, knock it off. Girlfriend, knock it off. Mom or dad, knock it off.
You know what? Happy Halloween. Welcome to Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. We're not going to knock off Ohio State Nebraska week. Full 2 hours for you, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865, numbers to get in. You can follow us on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio, at Danny Burke 5, at Hail Varsity is ways to follow us on Twitter. Can email Chris at HailVarsity.com. We're loaded up. Derek Peterson, Dr. Petey, going to be with us in 15 minutes. We will talk all things offensive line and run game with Nebraska football. You heard Coach Walters, some more thoughts from him in a moment on how Nebraska wins this thing Saturday, or at least makes it interesting. Danny Burke's ears have perked up. We'll get caught up with Mike Shewhart. Shuey's going to be in. And we can talk all things with him, golf, football, life with Shuey. Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, big games this weekend, man. You've got some monster games, not only with Penn State and Michigan, but Northwestern hosting Notre Dame, Ohio State, Nebraska. Supposed to be a big game. The names are big. And, of course, LSU and Bama. So Brad Edwards with us. Greg Smith will join us to talk recruiting. Big get for Nebraska. Javen Wright, son of Toby Wright. Toby Wright, one of my favorite players ever at Nebraska. His son, Buddha, committed to Nebraska. And we'll get Greg's take on that. And since it's Halloween, how about a ghost story from our favorite pirate, Mike Leach? The pirate going to be with us in the second hour. And we'll hear his ghostly tale of the Roosevelt in Hollywood, California. Danny Burke showed up in costume today. Danny Burke is going as a young Ron Jeremy.
I was waiting for you to say something, man.
You are rocking the stash with pride. It's Movember starting tomorrow.
Yeah.
I thought about not shaving today and trying to grow the stash. I can't ever do the stash justice like my dad did in the 80s when it was dark and it was furry and Magnum P.I. was jealous and Burt Reynolds was jealous and Ron Jeremy was jealous. So I just never attempted the mustache. There's only one dude in the Schmidt house that can rock a mustache that well, and it's Steve Schmidt.
Yeah, nobody else is really a big fan of it but myself and my friends who just laugh at me for having it. So there's really only two times it's acceptable for me to do it, I figured today. And that is Halloween, because I can play it off as a costume, and then Movember, because it's Movember.
Right,
and you just got to do it. But I don't know how long it's going to stay, but we'll see.
Dude, let it flow, brother. I mean, just go at it.
Then I can act like a stubborn dad and like tell kids to get off my lawn. That's what I always like to envision.
I would go more with the actress or actor side of things.
Or I kind of think of like a cop, like, hey kids, what are you doing over there?
Do you have aviators?
I could get some.
You can get some aviators.
Yeah. I'll make it work.
Danny Burke, Highway Patrol. Respect his authority. Okay. Ohio State's gotta prove something to me. I know they're ranked in the top 10 of the college football playoff. I know they're the Ohio State University. I know they've dealt swift butt kickings to Nebraska the last few years. But I got to see if Ohio State actually gets off the mat defensively. 2 weeks is a long time. 4- and 5-star rankings that guys will end up in the NFL. Their defensive line is very good, even without Bosa. They have some dudes. I get it. But, man, They are a mess when it comes to the quick strike. They are a mess when it comes to just getting just bludgeoned, getting gouged for big plays. It's rough, Coach Walters. And Nebraska, they spent some time today after practice. Big plays against Ohio State, man, that is the word of the week.
We're going to have to create big plays. This is not a defense where you're going to be able to go, you know, 12 plays, 15 plays. We got to find explosives here and there in the run game and in the pass game. You know, we're going to continue to study film and figure out how to get us in situations to create explosives. But, you know, that's got to be important for us, is to, you know, get some chunk yardage and scheme and create ways. They're going to play man. So that's the type of game. If you can beat your man on the outside, then there's going to be some big plays to be made. Now, on the outside, not a lot of guys have truly beaten the corners a whole lot, but that's the challenge at hand, and if you do, then there's going to be some big plays to be made.
It's a challenge. You have to respect your opponent. Yes, 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 I get it. But I was talking with Brandon Vogel before the show, and Vogues is the king of all awesome stats. Great story by Derek Peterson. We'll talk to Dr. Petey coming up here with Nebraska's run game. The Huskers, when it comes to passing the football 41 times this year, they have 15 yards or more on pass plays. You had Coach Walters asked about this earlier today in reference to the run game. Nebraska, one out of every five rushing attempts goes for 10 yards or more. That is sweet if you're a Nebraska football fan. Between the number of 15-plus yard passes you have from Adrian and 20% of your run plays, you're getting a first down, if not more. That's music. That's music to Nebraska fans' ears in reference to this Ohio State defense. Oh, my gosh. Ohio State has already allowed 42 plays of 20 yards or more. Let that sink in. 42. They allowed 59 all of last year. They allowed 48 all of 2016. You know how good that secondary was. You know how good that defense was in 16. 2015, 39 total. This is the era of a spread offense. This is the era of basketball on grass. This is the era by showing up to a stadium. You should score 24 points on offense, any offense, because you are that conflicted. And if you look at or breathe on somebody wrong defensively, flag, right? By default, you are scoring 24 if you show up. And if you're halfway decent, you're putting up close to 30. If you're really good, upper 30s. If you're elite, you're Bama, right? Or you're Clemson. LSU, don't know, but that their defense is really, really good. So that's the number. And this isn't just Ohio State. And their schedule's been okay, but their schedule doesn't look as good as it did to me a month ago. I gave way too much credit to TCU. I've given way too much credit to Penn State. Penn State's not a good football team. They're not what they've been.
I think you've been not. I've been better with Penn State, but TCU, you were on them earlier. I don't think gloating about or boasting about Penn State that much.
No, though. But I mean, I got kind of wowed by what TCU did to Ohio State, with the thought being, damn, nobody does this to Ohio State.
Mm-hmm. Their season's only going to go up from here. It's pretty much what you imagined.
Yes,
it's
right?
Quite the opposite.
Right, and TCU, I mean, they just lost to Kansas. They're 3-5. And they're explosive.
Mm-hmm.
Defense was supposed to carry the flag for them. Ohio State allowed this against Oregon State. I know Oregon State just went off and had a miracle come back against Colorado, but Oregon State's awful. Ohio State allowed Oregon State to do this to them. Okay, it's game one. They'll get better, right? That's your thinking. They allowed an 80-yard run, a 78-yard run, and a 49-yard pass. How's that for the trifecta? TCU had a 93-yard touchdown run, their longest in school history, a 51-yard pass play, and another 42-yard pass play. Penn State, a 93-yard touchdown pass, and then a 51-yard run. Against Purdue, it was better, sort of. They had a 43-yard touchdown pass, Blau did, and then Purdue got Ohio State on a 42-yard touchdown run and a 40-yard touchdown run. Ohio State screwed up in the red zone, mainly field goals. Purdue had 42 of their 49 points scored by their offense. There was a pick six that made it 49-20, right? Well, three of those scoring drives were boom. One big play, gone. Now, if I'm a Nebraska fan and I look at where the offense has come since Michigan, I look at the talent you have in Adrian Martinez, I look at what Spielman can do, I look at what Stan is. But the thing that makes me smile about Saturday, again, I told you, I'll start out one way Monday and I'll grow into, you're telling me there's a chance Lloyd Christmas by Friday.
I think he started that last Monday, to be honest.
Okay, maybe I have. Maybe I'm on a two-week bender here. But it's the rushing touchdowns. Young secondaries can get lit up. They do. And at some point, they stabilize if they're any good. Ohio State has yet to stabilize. And Urban said as much in his press conference. But the fact that they've given up an 80-yard touchdown run, a 51-yard touchdown run, and then a pair of 40-yard touchdown runs. This isn't you're just inside the 20 and you pop one, right? Like Troy did for a 26-yard score, one of their three. There is more than a habit. There's more than a trend. There's a very blatant history of being able to not just run on Ohio State, but gash Ohio State. And think if you can do both. Now, the question is, do you think Nebraska can do both Saturday morning? As you're getting your kegs and eggs ready, as you're mixing your Bloody Mary, as you're having a little screwdriver action, that's what it comes down to. This is on the offense Saturday. This is on the line, the run game. It's on the 11 dudes to go make plays and take what's there, not be reckless. But there is a strong opportunity here to do what Coach Walters said and go make big plays, right? If you're Nebraska and you're in this Frost offense, it could be a big-time coming-out party. I don't know if they're going to win, but let's talk about some points of substance in a back-and-forth type shootout. Wisconsin, probably an 8 or 9 win football team. Nebraska put up 24 points. You saw it growing. You saw some flashes as things tried to stabilize in the Purdue game. There were moments of, wow, that was pretty awesome. And then there were voids of any productivity against Colorado. What I've seen from this offense, because they found a really money 1-2 punch with Ziggy and with Washington, is they can run the football. They'll pop one. As data suggests, every fifth play for at least 10. And then you've got Adrian with his legs, but then you've got a guy like Spielman that's already gone for two bills against Ohio State a year ago after the catch. And if you're getting 80 yards, 93 yards, 40 yards, 51 yards, 49 yards, it isn't just man coverage, which Ohio State will employ, but it's a guy missing a tackle and then the other 10 dudes not being around either. And forgive me if I don't think of great blocking when Oregon State, TCU, Purdue, and Penn State come to mind. Down Ohio State defense. They can work. They can go back to fundamentals. At this point, they are what they are, and they're vulnerable to what they're vulnerable to. They can work to get better, but you're going to do something as an offense. And if you're Nebraska, being able to run and throw it, that would be so enticing Saturday morning? Because that's the question here, is with Nebraska football Saturday, we're talking statement game, we're kind of talking measure and stick game. It's kind of a third rodeo this freshman year for Adrian in a very unfriendly environment. It's a name team, a ranked team, a big school. It's a target school that you're trying to go beat and take down and move up to eye level with. And I can't tell you what's going to happen defensively. If I'm betting money, it's going to be the offense that's going to carry the water for Nebraska football. It's a big responsibility, but it's doable against a defense like Ohio State's shown to be. So those are some numbers for you. Kind of time for Nebraska to go big and come home with the offense, with the Frost tempo, with the skill set and playmakers Nebraska has. We'll get caught up with Derek Peterson on the way. His thoughts on the 1-2 punch at running back and the job the O-line has done. Husker Hoops gets tipped off against Wayne State. We'll be down in the rail yard tomorrow. Roadshow Thursday. We'll get Dr. Petey's take on Husker Hoops. Brad Edwards coming up. The Pirate Mike Leach. Greg Smith. A loaded up Wednesday for you with Hail Varsity. Presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
1 hour from now, recruiting hit with Greg Smith and a ghost story with the Pirate Mike Leach. We say hi. I don't know what he's dressed as right now. To the good doctor, Derek Peterson at Dr. PDHV on Twitter. You can read him, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Derek, what's good? How are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
Good. Are you wearing scrubs?
No.
Okay.
Do you have the leaf blower costume on?
No, I have a t-shirt and jeans.
That's as far as we're going to go with what we're asking you, what you're wearing. Moving forward.
I appreciate that. Let's talk football.
Okay, the offensive line, my friend. Why are they better? What's happened? What's your take?
It seems like attention to detail. Jacob Padilla had a story on HailVarsity.com that just went live a couple minutes ago. It's attention to detail with that unit. It's them getting a little bit more comfortable within this scheme. And I think that has a lot to do with it. I remember Greg Austin when he first got here. You know, he would talk often about how when they took over at Central Florida, he had an offensive line room where guys didn't really like each other. They didn't want to be around each other outside of meeting rooms and away from practice facilities. And this group was the exact opposite. You almost had to get guys to focus because they liked each other a little too much. There was a little bit too much friendliness for him going on in meeting rooms and things like that, and he wanted guys to focus. I think as the season has gone on, I think, like I said, the attention to detail, the attention to hand placement, the attention to assignment, I think it's all gotten a little bit better. You've seen the penalties that have gone down really drastically over the last couple of weeks. Nebraska had 10 consecutively for like the first five or six games of the season, and that number has been whittled down to, I think they had 5 against Bethune-Cookman. So they're playing cleaner. The offensive line in particular is playing cleaner. You're not getting holding penalties. You're not getting dumb, procedural penalties from the offensive line anymore. And I think they're just more comfortable. You know, this was a scheme that was a lot different. They were asking them to pull. They were asking them to get out in space and block more in space and use athleticism. And that takes some time to get used to. It takes some time to get your bodies comfortable with. And I think, it was always going to be a process. We're starting to see some of the results of that, they're starting to see some of the benefits of the strength and conditioning gains that they made in the offseason. I think that those are starting to come into play a little bit now. And I think a little portion of it too is just confidence. Like they got a lot of confidence rolling, and I think this is a unit right now that feels like they can run it at people and that they can run successfully. And when you feel that way, there's a little bit of look good, feel good, play good mentality to that. And I think that's at play here as well. So confidence, attention to detail, and then just kind of being used to the system a little bit more.
Derek Peterson's with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Explosion is your story, the focus of the Husker offense. HailVarsity.com is where you read Derek Peterson. That's how I started the show off, because Coach Walters touched on big plays. Ohio State is there to, I don't want to say hand them out like it's candy, but they have not been good. They have not been good at shutting down the big play. And the thing that I think Nebraska makes them pretty unique in a good spot offensively for Saturday is that Nebraska's been doing it in the air and on the ground. They can do both on Saturday. Do you think that – do you have a number in mind? Like, how many big plays does Nebraska need to get? Let's define it. Plays of 20 yards or more. What's a good over-under Nebraska needs to hit to be in this thing Saturday in the fourth quarter?
Well, chunk plays, 10 yards gained on the ground or 15 yards gained through the air. They've been – I want to say they've been 15, 16, 17. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but that feels about right for what they've been each game. They can get, if they get 18 of those, let's say 9 on the ground or 10 or 11 on the ground and 8 through the air, I think you're feeling pretty good. I mean, look, those plays are there. They're going to be there for Nebraska. They've been there all season long, particularly on the ground, and that's a point of weakness for Ohio State right now is stopping the run. Nobody outside of Rutgers in the Big Ten has given up more 20-yard gains on the ground than Ohio State this season. So those are going to be there for Nebraska. I think the key on Saturday, and Walters talked about this a little bit today, Ohio State plays a lot of man coverage on the perimeter. So you got to beat your one-on-one matchups, right? And when you beat those, you got to make a play on the ball. Nebraska has 41 15-plus pass completions this season. So 41 times they picked up 15 yards or more through the air. 28 of those have gone to either J.D. Spielman or Stanley Morgan. They're going to get a ton of attention, a ton of focus, and a ton of Ohio State's game plan on Saturday. You still want them to make plays, and you still need them to make plays. And if Nebraska is going to have a chance, even a chance, they're going to have to make some plays, even if they're getting all the attention from the defense. But, if Nebraska could get somebody like Mike Williams to get a couple catches, to get a couple chunk plays, if they can get a guy like Jack Stoll, who's coming on a little bit as the season has gone on, to make a couple of those plays, if they can get maybe Maurice Washington out of the backfield on a seam route or a wheel route, or if they can get him lined up outside on a linebacker or on a safety and they can take advantage of that, I think you're feeling pretty good. Those plays are going to be there for Nebraska just based on the way that Ohio State plays and the way their defense is set up. But it's a matter of can Nebraska make those plays. I think they have the ability to. But if we're talking a number that they need to hit for chunk plays, I mean, you need to be probably 17, 18, 19, 20. You probably need to be in that range.
Hit your average at least. Derek Peterson's with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. At Dr. PDHV on Twitter is where you follow him. If Nebraska executes based on what Ohio State's been in the secondary, and that means the offensive line taking care of that front four that's got that NASCAR blitz package on third down, that's keeping Adrian clean and healthy, that's not a strip sack, I don't know who you focus on. And say you take Stan away. Well, you still got JD. Okay, say you take JD away, there's Stan. And okay, say somebody, say you stick 7 of the 11 on Stan and JD. Great. You still have Maurice that, man, he showed me quite an ability in the Northwestern game. And I love the crossing combos that him and Spielman invoke on defenses around the seam and to the sideline. It's a tough, tough ask. Now, is Nebraska's O-line up for this challenge with that front four from Ohio State?
I mean, that's the question. That's what everybody wants to know. When you talk about a measuring stick game offensively, that's where the measurement is going to get taken, because, when we were going into the Michigan game, we weren't worried about the skill position players, right? Like, even then, and that was before Maurice Washington kind of settled into a groove, and that was before Adrian Martinez did as well. I mean, the skill position players, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, like those weren't an issue heading in. It was, can the offensive line hold up against the best defensive line that they will have faced in a while? Now they're going up against another elite defensive front. Can the offensive line be better than it was the last time? Because they got swallowed by Michigan in that game. They lost handedly in the trenches. It was, you know, that line of scrimmage battle in the Michigan game that told you all you needed to know about how far away Nebraska is from really competing on a national stage for championships. And so you hope that that same thing doesn't happen against Ohio State, because if it does, they're going to be in for a long day. You talk about confidence and you talk about kind of clicking offensively. That stuff needs to continue. That stuff needs to carry over. The offensive line needs to have a really good game because, you know, like you said, that's the question mark in this one. Can they hold up against Ohio State's front line? Now, Ohio State not having Nick Bosa works really well for Nebraska, but at the same time, like, Urban Meyer just continues to pump out first, second, third round draft picks on the defensive line. They've still got plenty of talent in not just their defensive line, but their front seven. So, you know, that's going to be where the game is decided. It's not going to be on Adrian Martinez's arm. I think he has the ability to win them a football game. It's not going to be on Divine Ozigbo's legs or Maurice Washington's legs. It's going to be at the line of scrimmage. Can Nebraska establish it offensively and be able to run the ball? And then on the defensive side of the ball, which you haven't talked about yet, can they keep Ohio State from finally running the ball successfully?
Derek, now I want to switch over to Husker Hoops. Some news today. We saw one player transfer. I want you to give us a little detail about that, if you can. And then also, what to expect out of this upcoming game. Are you expecting a lot of the starters to stay in consistently, or is it going to be kind of the type of game where you fluctuate a lot of players, see what they can do in this live game?
Yeah, so sophomore forward D-Dutch Chan announced that he was transferring. He joined the team in August and is now leaving. He didn't play in the scrimmage against Iowa State. He didn't show a ton in their open practice that they had. It was either last week or the week before. But it was one of those situations where he was going to be in an uphill climb for minutes. And I think there are a couple things off the court that were an issue as well. But in relation to the exhibition game on Thursday, I think, you know who the stars of your team are, so to speak. You know, you've got your core four. You know what those guys bring. I don't think there's not going to be a ton of advantage to playing them heavy minutes. You know, this will be treated like a preseason game, and as it should, when you're talking about, you know, getting guys in for a first, you know, 10, 15 minutes and then getting them out. And getting the main guys of your rotation and getting them out. This one is, to me, this one is about who can your rotation players be? What does Nana look like? Is he a guy that can step into a bigger role this offseason? What does Brady Hyman look like going up against another front line? It's about finding who your role players are going to be off the bench, because, you know, the core four is all back, but the rotation off the bench and that bench unit, it's going to look a little bit different. You're having to replace Anton Gill, who played that six-man role for you for a while. And if you're starting Thomas Allen as your fifth starter, you know, I thought Thomas was going to be that six-man guy. Maybe you start Nana. But if Thomas is going to be your fifth starter, you got to figure out who that sixth guy off the bench is going to be. You want to figure out how you're going to stagger things. You want to figure out where you need scoring. I think that's going to be that's going to be the purpose that this exhibition serves. Obviously, you want to get guys playing well, but you know, I think this isn't going to be about how many points does James Palmer Jr. score. It's not going to be about, you know, how many highlight plays does Isaiah Roby make. It's going to be about what do the other guys look like, and how do you feel about them heading into the season.
Dr. Petey, hey brother, thanks for the time today.
Sounds good, man. Thank you.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It is time for the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart is in studio. Brad Edwards coming up. Don't forget Ghost Stories with Mike Leach coming up at 525. Greg Smith, a recruiting hit as well. Danny Burke is dressed as Ron Jeremy today. I'm going as a youth sports father. Mike Shuhart is always in character and in no costume as a golf pro. And you can find Shuey at Wilderness Ridge to get those lessons locked in during the fall, so your money during the spring. Shuey, we're talking about Thanksgiving Day brunch is something you got to do at Wilderness Ridge.
Have to.
Just drop the... Think about this. And we've all had that whole Griswold family Christmas turkey.
Oh, yeah.
Right? You go to the in-laws, or maybe you're just, I'm raising my hand here, not effective with the bird. So let someone else that's incredible do it. Wilderness Ridge can take that...
It's incredible.
That juggling act out of your hand, Thanksgiving Day. Why not? Dine with them. Go find them. Wilderness Ridge lets you do that, and you can make your reservations today, wildernessridgegolf.com, and 434-5118. Get the reservations in for the Thanksgiving Day brunch. You were telling me about a brunch that was going on.
Yeah.
For a theme,
this
right?
Last
for
Sunday.
The Halloween.
Yeah, they usually do a Halloween brunch.
Yes.
On Sundays. And means it's Halloween, obviously. But this year they decided to do a theme, and they did the Harry Potter theme. And it was awesome. I mean, they did a fantastic job. I'm not super up on all the Harry Potter stuff.
That's a good answer.
Most of the people that were there were very into the Harry Potter. It was really cool. We had a lot of fun. It was packed.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't get in. I mean, there were so many people.
And the food's money.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, if you...
After you play nine, you can go in there and just... Put the feed bag on.
Yeah, you couldn't play the other nine, that's for sure. You'd be done. You'd be taking a nap.
You're out. Okay, talk to me here about Tiger and Phil, the pay-per-view. Okay, I heard 1995 pay-per-view. That's the amount. That's for Tiger, Phil, in the desert, Vegas. Do we have a date? Is there anything more solidified with it?
No, not yet, but it's going to be close to that Thanksgiving time.
Okay.
So whether it's before or after, I haven't heard a date yet, but I think it's...
That's kind of gutsy.
Wasn't it on a Black Friday?
Is it?
Am I wrong? I thought I
that's
heard
kind
it was
of
Black
a,
Friday.
Could be. I know that was one
I
of the
I could double
things.
Check really quick.
Yeah, do that.
But.
That's kind of a dubious date for old Eldrick, if we want to just get down to it.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm watching the Colorado-Nebraska game, and Nebraska's getting ready to work Colorado and go play Texas for the Big 12 championship.
Oh, yeah.
And there's still a second left on that clock down there in Jerry World.
It says it'll be, November 23rd, the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was going to be after.
All right. So you get to watch Nebraska, Iowa. Hopefully you'll be there. We'll give you a chance to qualify for that Black Friday road trip. You can watch Nebraska, Iowa, and then check out Tiger and Phil. That's a pretty good price point. Most of us are used to getting rolled for... $100 for MMA or the years that Mike Tyson took people out in 90 seconds.
$20?
$19.99? $20? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
Let me ask you this. Is this something Wilderness could get?
Oh, I don't know. I'll have to check into that.
I'm just saying, let's just rock and roll it. Go watch Nebraska,
we'll have to check
Iowa,
into that.
At the Lodge.
And then watch the shootout
watch
in the desert.
Shootout in the desert.
All right, I'm on it.
Okay, Shuey. What are you expecting here from Tiger and Phil moving forward in this showdown, in this matchup?
I don't know. It's such a unique format. I mean, I don't want to say unique because they used to do it years ago.
Skins game, right?
Yeah, the skins game, and then before that, they did Shell's Wonderful World of Golf, where they would have Arnie playing Jack or Gary Player playing Arnold Palmer. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's something that's been done for a long time. Now, the pay-per-view part of it, but I think it'll be super successful. I mean, those are two of your more iconic golfers that a lot of people know. Looking at it on paper, Tiger probably would beat Phil, if you just looked at it on paper. But, man, Phil is a...
Phil likes Vegas.
He does. He's a gambler, man. And the format's different. It's basically a match play mm-hmm. type of a format. It's not a stroke play format.
Yeah.
So it makes things a lot different, So what if you make a 10? You're only really going one down, mm-hmm. So it's like it suits Phil a little bit more in his style, but it should be interesting to see. It'll be, you know, and again, how much those two guys like one another. I think they like one another okay, but
they still want to beat the hell out of each
exactly.
other.
Exactly. So it'll be fun. I mean, I'm curious to watch it.
Yeah. No, it'll be good stuff on Black Friday. We get a time and date for sure. You said Black Friday?
Yeah. Not sure the time.
Well, after Iowa and Nebraska.
Better be.
Yes.
So that comes first.
Phil's going to have.
Well, Phil will have to wait.
Phil's going to have heat on Nebraska, Iowa, and Washington State for the Apple Cup.
No question.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a Saturday. So
It's 3 p.m. Eastern time, so 2 o'clock our time.
Right after Nebraska.
Right after
Nebraska,
man.
Iowa.
Yeah. Watch the victory and then switch it right over and then watch the shootout in the desert.
All right, Chewy. What happens Saturday? You're a huge Nebraska football fan. I put some numbers together. I spit out the glimmer of hope about the offense going to town against that Ohio State defense that is not just limping. They are crawling. All right? What's the Chewy gut say?
We get smoked. Not smoked, but we'll...
It's going to be Wisconsin-like?
Yeah.
Is it going to be Wisconsin-like, or is it going to be more Michigan-like?
It's going to be more Michigan-like.
You really think so?
Yeah. Because we're afraid of Ohio State. The guys that are skill guys are not afraid, because they're...
But they're not playing defense.
They're young. The guys that have been smoked by them are your offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid of them, because they just thump them.
You're just setting fire to my manifesto here.
Those are the guys that have been around and got thumped by him, so they have a little bit of a bad psyche going on. But they are playing better, so their confidence should be up. So if they can withstand that first few onslaughts of them, then they might – I mean, their offense will be okay.
Take some punches, don't fall, stabilize.
But, man, you got some guys in there that have gotten beat up by him pretty bad. I mean, not even a game. I mean, they just outmatched him all the time, and – You know, your skill guys haven't been there, so they don't know,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Which is good,
but you got to give them time to be able to do something, and your line is the one that's a little suspect. So.
Well, both lines of scrimmage.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the issue. That's what we kind of come back to. Even with this system, being able, I don't want to say hide, but to help the offensive line.
But that being said, you definitely, as you watch them, they've gotten better and better. Especially the last couple weeks, you can see
they just need something good to happen.
Exactly,
right?
Their confidence is getting better. They're playing better, so that'll help a little bit going into that game. They feel a little better about themselves. You know, that's why I said that first quarter, the first 10 minutes is going to be very crucial if they can hang in there with them. And you know, if they get punched in the mouth enough times and they can't get back up, then it's going to be trouble.
That's a rewind, man. That's all too common. More of the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart, Chewy is in. Ghost Stories with Mike Leach coming up in the 5 o'clock hour.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shewhart, Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke. Don't forget Ghost Story from the Pirate, Mike Leach coming up. Brad Edwards, Greg Smith recruiting on Buddha Wright. And maybe some inside info on Mr. Robinson's announcement tomorrow at 2:30. Chewy, we're talking Halloween and boogeyman, and Ohio State is the boogeyman for Nebraska, one of many teams in the Big Ten. But is it fair to say, as we talked Tiger and Phil last segment in their pay-per-view match right after Nebraska-Iowa, is Ohio State the Tiger Woods to the rest of the PGA circa mid-2000s? Is that a fair comparison?
No question.
Where it's just a mental block, oh my God, it's Ohio State?
Yeah, I mean, you watch Tiger when he was in his prime back in there, and it's like...
Change your shorts.
Pretty much. When Tiger started coming, you could hear it. The crowd started buzzing, the roars. Here comes Tiger. And the guys panicked because of it, you know? You watched him. The guys just lost it when Tiger would come from behind and win tournaments. And it's kind of the same thing, you know? Ohio State is, they got five-star guys all over the place. They're big, strong, fast. They know how to play football.
And they got another dude that's big, strong, and fast behind him.
Yeah. And it's like one after another. So it's like they they start popping you around pretty easy, and you start to get intimidated by them, and now you got to go play them. Or am I intimidated by them? It's like sometimes that just happens, you know. It's like you, as much as you want to try and feel like you can beat them, but if they're beating you on every play, it's pretty hard to maintain your confidence, you know. So it's like you got to start building some success. You got to have a little bit of success to build the confidence that builds the belief that, man, I can go do what I trained to do and be successful. But, I mean, if they're better than you, they're better than you, you know. It's like you can think of it all you want. You still got to produce some result.
Sure.
You know, so it's like, yeah, I think I can beat Tiger Woods, but if I go head-to-head against him and he beats me 100 times in a row, it's like, can I really beat him?
And you've had some really tough, tough years where 56-14, 62-3, and now it's year three in a row of getting Ohio State. And it's just is what it is. Now, they aren't as dominant. They're human this year.
Looks like it.
And the guys that are going to need to make some of the plays, if they get help from the lines of scrimmage, can do it. And I'm talking about Adrian Martinez.
Yeah. So that's the encouraging part. I mean, their offense is good. I mean, they're dynamic. They can do things, you know. So if you can just maintain enough stalemating with them instead of them letting them dominate you, then you got a chance.
All right, let's get qualified here. Black Friday giveaway coming up November 9th. Black Friday roadie to Iowa City, Nebraska. Here is that cue to call.
Worse? How could they get any worse? We're at the threshold of hell!
Is this heaven?
It's Iowa.
The jolliest bunch of fools this side of the nut house.
Hey, you know, America loves points.
Thank you, Bob Diaco. 800-825-5865 or 466-3776. Caller 8, caller 9, qualify. The Black Friday roadie with ESPN Lincoln. That's Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf Segment. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, is Danny Burke. Caller 8, caller 9, qualify now. Brad Edwards, college football thoughts. Mike Leach, Greg Smith, next hour with Hail Varsity.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in. It's hour two. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Danny Burke, the Pride of Chicago, golf pro extraordinaire Mike Shewhart sitting in. And don't forget Ghost Stories with the Pirate Mike Leach in about 25 minutes. That'll be entertaining. We say hi to Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, college football guru, and all over the college football playoff. Brad, what a monster weekend, man. How are you?
Oh, it is a great weekend. I'm doing great myself. I'm excited to be heading down to Baton Rouge for arguably the biggest game of the weekend. Actually, on paper, there's no question it's the biggest game of the weekend. We'll see how competitive it is. But yeah, it is. It's fun. In fact, I was just recording a segment for a podcast where, you know, we always go through, according to our playoff predictor, the biggest playoff impact games of the week. And we were just saying that last week the highest impact game was Florida-Georgia, and this week there are five games that rank higher than that one on the scale. So it's not just Alabama-LSU. It's not just in the SEC, which also has the SEC East Championship game,
yep,
Georgia at Kentucky, but elsewhere in the country, some other really big games.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio, ESPN Insider College Game Day, at JBradEdwards on Twitter. And I want to start with Urban Meyer, Ohio State, the narrative about his return, his health, his press conference, and the lack of eye contact. Are you going to be back for 2019? What's your read on Urban Meyer this week and the Buckeye team as they come in at number 10 at the initial rankings? We'll start with the Nebraska matchup. We were going through the numbers and just how many monster plays, how many big plays the Ohio State defense has given up, not just in the air but on the ground. What do you feel about Ohio State Saturday? Do they get back? Do they get right? Do they get better? Or are they still going to be shaky?
I don't know how to answer that. That is, I think, one of the biggest questions of this weekend. And look, this is clearly not one of the big games that we're all talking about, but I think for all the reasons you just mentioned, it's a very important game nationally for people to keep an eye on, because I may have mentioned this last week on your show, which is that we've seen Ohio State in recent years a couple of times really come out with a vengeance after losing a game. Mm-hmm. You know, the 2015 loss at home to Michigan State, they came out the next week and just destroyed Michigan and Ann Arbor. Last year after that Iowa loss, they came out and beat Sparty by about 50. So we've seen them, you know, kind of get that wake-up call in losing a game and then just, you know, turn it up a couple notches. And I really don't know if this team has a higher gear from what we've seen so far, because they've, in various ways, have been kind of shaky even while winning, even sometimes by, you know, winning by comfortable margins prior to that Purdue loss. And since we haven't seen them post-Purdue, this will be the first time. I think there are a lot of questions. Will we see them come out and show that extra gear? Will the same problems persist? I mean, what's going to happen? Is Meyer going to is he also going to look different, or is he going to look as, you know, kind of shaken up on the sideline as he has in recent weeks? So it's just a lot to be determined. And Nebraska's offense, the way that it's playing, I think will be a good test for that Ohio State defense. Has been quite leaky.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Brad, let's shift gears and focus on LSU and Bama. What are a couple of the storylines you're digging into as you're going to be down there in on the Bayou Saturday? What are two things that have your ears perked up?
Yeah, for me, the biggest thing is the question of what would it look like for LSU to, you know, be really competitive and have a chance to win this game? What would have to happen for them? And there are a couple things that I keep hearing people mention. And granted, when people ask you the question, you got to come up with some sort of answer, and so I'm not ripping people for trying to give an answer. But the two most common answers to me are fraught with issues. One is, okay, LSU has to win the turnover battle. And it sounds good. It looks good on paper. The problem is that typically when you're talking about a team committing multiple turnovers, the quarterback is going to have to be involved. Tua has turned the ball over one time this season, and that was a sack fumble. Like, he's not thrown an interception. Even if you go back to, you know, pre-Tua, to Jalen Hurts as the starting quarterback, over the last 25 games, Alabama's starting quarterback has four turnovers.
That's
in 25
insane.
Games.
That's insane.
It is insane. So, I mean, on top of having the best talent in the country, they don't beat themselves. They don't give you anything easy. And so I think you can kind of rule that one out. I mean, that's not to say it can't happen in a one-game scenario, but it's very unlikely that Alabama, through turning the ball over, is going to give LSU some good opportunities. Then it goes to the other side, which is, okay, what can LSU do to slow down Alabama's offense? And what they point to, and this is, I mean, look, it's a valid argument that Alabama has not played a good defense yet this season. But when you look at LSU's recipe, which is that they have not one but two pretty good corners, and Alabama thrives on the passing game with Tua. I mean, let's say they use their corners and they take out two of Alabama's receivers. The problem is Alabama has four wideouts who are putting up big numbers. Tua distributes the ball so evenly among these guys, and a tight end who's putting up big numbers. You got to take all of them out. If you have a mismatch somewhere on the field with you know, the three wideouts and the tight end who are out there at any given time, he's going to find it, and he's going to take advantage of it. And the issue is this, which is that Alabama's most dangerous receiver, Jerry Jeudy, lines up in the slot 75% of the time. It is almost certain that LSU will not put its best corner, Greedy Williams, on a slot receiver. And if they do, it's going to open up other things. But more than likely, they won't put their best cover guy on Alabama's most dangerous receiver. And so that poses problems to LSU being able to slow down Alabama's offense just because they have a couple of good corners. So Where they're going to get the stops, I don't know. I certainly don't think LSU's offense is capable of scoring a lot of points on Alabama. And, look, this is one with the way Alabama puts up points, especially in the first half, that with one of LSU's best players, Devin White, out for the first half due to suspension for a targeting call late in the last game, they got to be very careful because this game could be over at halftime.
Brad, I want to switch over to the Big Ten, and I do want to skip over for now at least the Penn State and Michigan matchup. I'm a little bit more intrigued with this Big Ten West matchup for Iowa and Purdue. Purdue's a 3-point favorite at home, both coming off of a loss. Iowa arguably should have and could have won that game over Penn State, and Purdue losing by 10 to Michigan State, who's been here and there all season. But, of course, Purdue had the big win over Ohio State. But what are you expecting to see out of this matchup? What are your predictions?
Yeah, I like Iowa in this one. I think that their defense is going to, and I realize Purdue has an explosive offense, and they certainly struggled last week. Maybe for the first time this year, they really struggled. And I think Iowa will be able to do enough offensively. They weren't good on offense last week. I mean, you look at it when it's all said and done, even though the score looked good for Iowa as far as the point score, they didn't have an offensive touchdown, and I think they'll bounce back. They have been a pretty good offense for much of this year. At least they have been getting better all the way up until that point. And so I think they'll get well offensively against Purdue. I'm not saying I think it's a blowout, but I like Iowa a lot to be able to win this game. And look, the fact that three of the four top teams in the West lost last week means that race is still very much open, even though I don't think there's any longer a playoff contender in the West. Certainly the race is open because very few people have a lot of faith in Northwestern's ability to run the table, even though they're playing out of conference this week. I still think that any of those four teams could end up winning the West.
Let's go to Northwestern, and how tight is this game going to be for Notre Dame? Northwestern's just... they rise up. They rise to the occasion. I know the home field isn't necessarily home field for them, but they've been good, and they are so great in tight games.
They are, and that was what I was going to say when you asked what I expect. I mean, I expect it to be a close game because that's just what Northwestern does. Like, win or lose, it tends to just come down to the wire. They have a way of just making it a one-possession game, and they win more than their fair share of those games. I mean, one of the craziest stats to me right now is that Northwestern has won 12 of its last 13 conference games. And it is it's kind of mind-boggling to think that any Power 5 team could win 12 out of 13 conference games and not be ranked in the top 25. And it's not like there are people out there saying that they should be ranked and they're not. Like, we understand why they're not ranked. It's because they got blown out by Duke at home. They lost at home to Akron. They nearly lost to Rutgers. I mean, there's so many things about this team that you can be unimpressed with, and yet whenever you doubt them or whenever you put a better team in front of them, that's when they play their best. And so I'll be really surprised if Northwestern doesn't at least give Notre Dame a scare.
Penn State, they're not as good as they were a year ago. Obviously, a lot of missing pieces with talent around McSorley. Michigan's kind of kicked it into gear. What do you see Saturday here? Is this does revenge tour continue for Mr. Khakis?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, this being a home game, I think it's really tough to see Michigan losing this one. They've been really good at home. Now, if there's one thing I could point to where Penn State might be able to hang around and have a shot, it's that we've seen Michigan, because of their style defensively, because of the way that they will typically play, man in the secondary, and they'll bring a lot of heat up front. They do occasionally give up some long quarterback runs. Like, I've seen a lot of times that quarterbacks are able to get loose, and then once they get past that initial rush, they've got a lot of room to run. And McSorley is the kind of guy who can really hurt you if you do that too many times, or if he's able to evade the pass rush. And so I can see Penn State being able to make a few plays that way, but that usually is not going to get you in the end zone. It might get you across midfield, But as the field condenses, you're going to have to make plays to get a touchdown, and I don't see Penn State getting too many of those. So I like Michigan, and I'd be really surprised if Michigan doesn't still have that one loss going into Columbus at the end.
All right, then the SEC East battle between Georgia and Kentucky. Do you see Kentucky going back to being a basketball school and Georgia going back to being a powerhouse like last year, or how do you envision this game being played out?
You know, I still have a hard time seeing Kentucky win the game, but I will say that I like Kentucky's chance against Georgia better than I like LSU's chance against Alabama, even though I think from a talent standpoint, LSU is closer to Alabama than Kentucky is to Georgia. There's just something about the matchup in that Georgia has not been great in run defense this year. And if you look at a number of categories, rush defense-wise, and look, and some of that is in, you know, against teams that don't have very good quarterback play, like Florida last week ran the ball really well in the first half against Georgia, even though, you know, Florida's not, you know, not much of a threat throwing the ball. And that's what Kentucky is. I mean, Kentucky's not much of a threat throwing the ball, but we know they can run it very well. And I think with that home crowd and that, you know, maybe a little bit of a matchup advantage, not to mention there is something – I realize Kentucky came off of a very emotional finish on its end, but that was a rivalry game that Georgia played last week, and it's often not easy to bounce back the week after a game like that that you're really emotionally invested in. So there are a number of reasons to think that Kentucky can keep it close. Kentucky cannot fall behind in this game. They've got to be playing with the lead pretty much out of the gate. And so if Georgia could get up 10 points at any point, I think the game is over. But I like Georgia, but I see this one being closer than the game in Baton Rouge.
Brad, about 90 seconds here. With the college football playoff rankings out, you have Bama, Clemson, say Notre Dame. Say all three win out. Say that's who the three spots are, Bama, Clemson, Notre Dame. That means you have the Big Ten, the Pac-12, and the Big 12 available. What conference has the strongest argument right now?
Yeah, I would say that the Big Ten is the most likely. Certainly if Michigan were to win out, given the spot where they are right now, having adding a win at Ohio State to that, it'd be really hard to imagine them being left out of the playoff. Even Ohio State, if they were to bounce back, start playing better, and they win out. I know they're behind Washington State right now. They're behind Oklahoma. I definitely see them jumping over Washington State. I think the Oklahoma one could be more interesting given the nature of Ohio State's loss. But I think the Big Ten overall as a conference is in better shape to get that fourth team than the Big 12 or the Pac-12.
Brad, enjoy down in Baton Rouge. Going to be an awesome ball game, and we'll be listening to you. Thanks for a few minutes with us today.
All right, always enjoy it, guys.
Take care.
Take care.
Brad Edwards, College Game Day, ESPN Insider, going to be there for Game Day, Bama and LSU. That'll be a 7 o'clock delight, and we'll have Real Red Reaction, Nebraska, Ohio State, as soon as that game wraps up. Myself, Danny Burke, JP from 96 Kicks, and we'll have the post-game Real Red Reaction for you. Excited about that. Recruiting. As you had Buddha Wright commit to Nebraska, that was real early this morning. He committed last week. It was announced today. And Greg Smith will have that for you. He'll also have an update for you on Wandale Robinson. That announcement, that commitment, the stud out of Kentucky, comes tomorrow. As we're down in the rail yard, a little roadshow Thursday, getting ready for Nebraska basketball. We'll be down there at the Hale Varsity offices. Greg Smith is next. Mike Leach, the Pirate, is next. Some ghost stories for you this Halloween with Hale Varsity.
And now,
back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. It is time to talk recruiting. Don't forget, coming up about 8 minutes away, the Pirate Mike Leach and a Halloween story, a little ghost story for you this Halloween. Greg Smith is with us at Greg Smith HV. Greg, big time get this morning for Nebraska football. Break it down for us, bud. Your take on Buddha Wright, the legacy, the talented corner out of Arizona.
Yeah, a huge gift for Nebraska for a multitude of ways, right? As one is, you know, he's at a position of need for Nebraska, one of the biggest. You got to go one or two defensive back, offensive line, just kind of depending on your preference this cycle. But also, he's a really good, versatile athlete, right? So if you look at a guy that can, that is, what, 6'3", 190, can play safety, corner, maybe grow into an outside linebacker, those kinds of players are hard to find. Then when you throw in that he's a legacy, his father, Toby Wright, big-time black shirt in the 90s here, it all adds up to a really good commitment for Nebraska.
It is, and this is a kid that had options, thought about UCLA. Dad made it back for the first time in a long time, and I love me some Toby Wright, man, just lighting people up in Orange Bowls. So big in that that Orange Bowl against Florida State, and a great pro career with Papa Bear there. But Buddha is a guy that, you tell me, do you see him at corner because of his size, or do you see him at safety? Because, I mean, he's a really talented cover guy. Now that he can't come up and tackle in the box, but he is a very athletic safety. Could you see him focusing more at corner? I know he's listed as a corner, but is there a way for him to maybe hybrid it? What do you see for his future in Lincoln?
I think the best of both worlds would be if he's a hybrid guy, maybe a nickel type of player. So if you think about going into the future, because DiCaprio Boodle will just be a junior next year, and then Cam Taylor will be a freshman or a sophomore going into next year. Both of those guys play a little bit more on the outside, even though Cam has worked in some on the slot this year by necessity. So I think that Wright could fit in that corner role to play a little bit of that hybrid. I would love to be able to see, and this is just kind of a pipe dreams. I think people that watch defensive backs love to see this sort of thing. If you could end up at some point with him on one side at 6'3", 6'4", and then also Braxton Clark on the other side at 6'3", 6'4", and both of them are probably every bit of 6'4", as they're listed, you're in a really good position, especially in the Big Ten where you're going to face some bigger, more physical receivers. So it would be great if he could stay at corner, but I don't know if he'll end up staying at that position primarily.
When you've seen film of Buddha Wright, what sticks out to you about him? We've talked about his measurables, but from a skill standpoint, Arizona, really good state for high school football, man. What kind of wows you about him?
Yeah, the thing that jumps out to me, and it may end up being bad for him staying at corner, is his physicality. He's not afraid to come down and make a hit. I know that he likes to cover, and he takes pride in his technical skills, the technical ways of playing cornerback. But he will come down and make a hit, which I probably have a lot of his father in him on that one. But that's really what jumps out, is just his physicality, his ability to play bump and run in coverage. But I do like his technical aspects of his game, being able to play corner, because if you can pick up those nuances and be able to do some of the little things of a corner, that'll take you a long way of staying in position and making it look like you're always in position to make plays if you just know what you're doing out there and put it all together on a weekly basis.
Greg Smith with us, recruiting update, HaleVarsity.com and magazine at Greg Smith HV on Twitter. Greg will be down at the Hale Varsity offices, a roadshow Thursday. High above the rail yard in the balcony. We are going to ask you first, and if you're busy, we'll still get you on to start the show off, just because it is going to be all about reacting to Juan Dale Robinson's announcement that is scheduled tomorrow for 2:30 Central Time. You're all over it. You have been in contact with Juan Dale. First and foremost, how do you feel where Nebraska's at right now? And two, do you have a prediction for that announcement tomorrow?
Yeah, I think the announcement is at 2:30 Eastern, 1:30 Central, just to be clear.
Thank you.
No problem.
A damn time zone.
Yeah, the time zones will throw you off. I write it down multiple times because it gets you talking to kids from all over the country as Nebraska recruits nationally. I think the Nebraska's in a really good position with Juan Dale. Like, I feel as good as I did earlier in the week, maybe even a little bit better than I did earlier in the week even. I think the choice ends up being Nebraska tomorrow, and it's a fit situation and a relationship situation. Two big things for him where Nebraska's offense really fits Juan Dale Robinson, and they can use him in a multitude of ways and feature him in this offense, in both the way that they do with J.D. Spielman and a little bit of what they do with Maurice Washington right now. Combine that with a little DeAnthony Thomas from the past, and that's what you're looking at there. Plus, he has a great relationship with Ryan Helms and Scott Frost, really has a close bond with those guys. So I look for Nebraska to be the pick tomorrow, which would be a huge deal for Nebraska going forward.
What is it about Helms that just allows him to connect with folks like Wandale, like Maurice? I mean, he's natural at being sincere, yeah, but I mean, he's a gallon of Red Bull, brother.
Yeah, and see, and that's what I was going to say. You've talked to him in these post-practice settings, or maybe to the side or whatever, and you know that Ryan Helms is always cranked all the way up, right? But it's in a good way. Like, he's very passionate about Nebraska and what's going to be happening here in the future, and what should be happening at the running back position at Nebraska, plus a guy who's been here before, has walked in those guys' shoes. So you combine all of that. He's got a really compelling story to tell the different running back recruits that he talks to out on the trail, and they use him with other positions as well, because he's the recruiting JUCO, or the JUCO recruiting coordinator as well. So he touches all of those guys at the JUCO level and makes sure that they all get some attention from him. But Ryan Helms just is a connector. He's just able to connect with guys because of his passion, and people really get fired up talking to Ryan Helms.
Greg Smith's with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Greg Smith HV on Twitter. Wandale Robinson, that announcement, 1:30 Central Time, Western Hills High School, Ohio State, Nebraska, Purdue, and Alabama. And, you know, Saban's going to be at Alabama. Kentucky's been really had a revival season. Ohio State, Urban's not had the best week, 2 weeks, really. And then there's Purdue. There's still buzz about Purdue, but they're still also a 4-4 football team. Is stability and upside really the clincher for Nebraska here? You mentioned fit and relationship. Those are A and 1A. But would it be stability that really is kind of the sealer for Nebraska potentially tomorrow?
Yeah, I think that plays into it a great deal. I like you said about Jeff Grom and Purdue, and, you know, even though it's exciting, they're still just kind of an average team. I know they're better right now than Nebraska, and they beat Nebraska, but you still feel like Nebraska has the opportunity to go out and compete for championships into the future if they get this thing cranked up, whereas this feels like as good as it's going to get for Purdue, especially considering when you think about the stability, again, of Jeff Grom probably not going to be there. Like, I don't know many people outside of diehard Purdue fans, if they exist, that believe that Jeff Brohm is going to be there long term, right? So that does play a large part into it. And then some of those other schools do have some drawbacks, whether or not it's Kentucky seeming like they're allergic to the forward pass. Nick Saban, I know that you can get down there and you can win all of these championships, or at least have an opportunity to win one in your time there. But they also have so many guys that it's hard to say to a kid, hey, you're going to come down here and we're actually going to feature you versus, you know, you getting your three touches a game, and then we might win by 40, but you're not really going to factor in heavily. And then who knows what's going on at Ohio State. And sometimes guys are turned off by Urban Meyer, kind of the slime ball factor, for lack of a better term, with Urban. So you just don't know, right? Like, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, the slime ball factor is your winner today, folks.
It's high, right?
Greg Smith with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Greg, we will talk tomorrow, and I'm sure you'll be in contact with Wandale Robinson. Announcement at 1:30. Follow Greg Smith on Twitter at GregSmithHV. You can read up on the latest in Husker recruiting, HailVarsity.com. Get that premium subscription. Don't cost that much, and you'll love it. Promise you that. Greg, thanks. We'll talk tomorrow, bud.
Hey, thanks as always. Looking forward to tomorrow.
All right, there he is. As we promised, it's time for, well, a ghost story. A Halloween trip down memory lane with the pirate Mike Leach. Trick or treat, enjoy. Have you ever stayed in a haunted house?
Shoot, I think my mother-in-law's house is haunted, but I mean, she's a great lady, but
okay,
there's this one bedroom that's got some wild stuff.
What's gone on? What happened there?
Oh, you know, just I guess the furniture belonged to a relative and stuff, and it's really more of a vibe than anything else. But there was a room I stayed in at the Roosevelt Hotel years ago, in Los Angeles. It's in Hollywood, the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. The person at the desk said that the room was supposed to be haunted. I stayed up all night hoping I'd see something. I didn't stay up all night. I mean, I'd sleep and try to pretend to sleep so the ghost would think I was asleep so I could catch him, but no such luck. I think the ghosts are onto those that want to see him, so I think they make it difficult. Now, I never saw a ghost there, but the room's supposed to be haunted, and people, I guess, have either run out of that room because they had a bad experience or try to rent that room because they're hoping they see one. Me, I just got there late, and that's all that was left, and they were trying to not rent it, but I already had a reservation, and there was a certain amount of negotiation between the girl at the desk and the manager as to whether they're going to let me in there, because I guess somebody had a tough time and left or something. You know, I'm stuck there in L.A. at 10 p.m., have to get up early in the morning, and it's hard enough to get hotels as it was. And I just made it clear I was going to either sleep in their lobby or I was going to sleep in the room that they'd promised me that I'd reserved 2 weeks before. And so they sent me up to the haunted room, and we had an agreement that, you know, if I got scared and ran out of the room, then I took my own chances, and no harm, no foul. And so, I don't know. I didn't get to see. I didn't see anything. And so then, but it was a really cool room.
The pirate, as only the pirate can do, we got on to ghost stories, believe it or not, one time in a conversation. The Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. Danny, the way you've got that stash rocking, it looks like someday you'll stay at the Hollywood Roosevelt. You know anyone who stayed at the Roosevelt? It's like it's a famous hotel.
Is it? I was going to say I could be the people scaring the guests with my mustache.
Well, but I think folks would take you up on the mustache. Some
I'd
might.
Just be like normal out there.
It would
fit right in.
Yeah, just wear the aviators.
Probably true.
Here's my headshot. I'm Danny. I'm here to act. But the pirate telling us that, yeah, the mother-in-law's house is haunted, and he demanded to stay in a haunted room. Good stuff from Greg Smith. A jock doc on the way. What's up with the urban illness? We'll tell you. Hail Varsity continues.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Dr. Doug Davis with us, a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Doug, how are you, sir?
Doing pretty good, Chris. How about yourself?
You know, some of us are 1-7 now in fantasy football this year.
You know, you just keep beating yourself up and reliving this thing over and over again.
Well, I guess the good news, it's a big week in Ohio, and we'll head to Cincinnati first with A.J. Green. I may be playing the guy who has A.J. this weekend, so I'll take any help I can get, because turf toe is no fun, is it, Dr. Doug? What type of turf toe is A.J. Green dealing with? And I ask you what type, because I assume there's different grades, different levels of it.
Yeah, so you know, at this point, I don't know that we know for sure exactly how much of an injury his is, but you're correct that there are different levels or severities of this thing. You can have situations where the big toe actually dislocates right at the sort of the knuckle of the big toe, if you want to say that. The toe part dislocates over the top of the metatarsal there, and you tear the bottom of the joint capsule right there. That's kind of the ultimate turf toe. It's essentially the same problem as other turf toes, but the dislocation can actually occur. It happened to one of the Vikings players when I was up there. In most situations, though, that joint capsule on the which is the kind of the lining, if you want to say it that way, on the bottom of that joint. That tissue gets strained, and it can be just a matter of a mild deal that, you know, clears up in a couple of weeks, and sometimes it can, you know, last all season long, and guys never get back to where they can push off comfortably.
Dr. Doug Davis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking A.J. Green. Topic of turf toe, and that's the thing with turf toe. It's kind of like hamstring, right, where yeah, you just got to give this thing time. You can't rush it back, otherwise you're back on the DL, correct?
Yeah, that's really true. Although one of the nice things with turf toe is that you at least have an option of being able to protect that thing. One of the ways that we do that is to put a carbon fiber plate into the shoe. So you can imagine if you had an insole that you bought, but it was hard carbon fiber. And what it would do is it would limit your toe from moving up, so that, you know, when you're trying to push off with your big toe, you wouldn't have the motion of that big toe, and that would protect that turf toe. And that's a way that a lot of guys can come back from this thing earlier. Hamstrings are hamstrings.
Right.
You know, you can't really immobilize those. But the turf toe, at least you've got a shot at being able to help slow down the pain with using one of those carbon fiber insoles.
Can there be some collateral issue with the foot you're dealing with that has the turf toe?
Yeah, I got to tell you, Chris, the thing that worries me more than other things on that foot would be the athlete pushing off so much harder and so much more aggressively off their other leg. And that I've seen as well, where a guy out trying to play with a turf toe ends up getting an injury to his knee on the other side, cutting so much harder off of that side. And, you know, that can range anything from a collateral ligament injury to an ACL injury. So I really worry about it a little bit more on that opposite side because of that.
Dr. Doug, let's switch gears and stay in Ohio. Arachnoid cyst has found its way into the news this week. It's Urban Meyer. Can you give our sports fans a little bit of a backstory on what exactly this thing is and what Urban Meyer's dealing with?
Yeah, so arachnoid cysts are fluid collections that occur in a variety of different places. They can be in the spinal column. They can be up inside of the head, in the cranium. And what it refers to, this arachnoid, is it's a layer of tissue that we have that surrounds the spinal cord, and then it surrounds the brain. And so in that particular layer, there's a tendency, not frequent, I mean, it's a pretty rare problem, but there is a tendency for cysts to develop in certain locations. And just like a cyst that people might be more familiar with, you know, let's say on the back of your wrist, a ganglion cyst on the back of your wrist, or a Baker cyst in the back of the knee, the pressure that those cysts exert onto the surrounding tissues are what cause the pain generally, and cause the symptoms that go on. And so in the case of what we've heard about Urban Meyer, you know, this has been something he's been dealing with since the 1990s, and intermittent levels of headaches associated with it. And certainly can understand how with an arachnoid cyst that he could be having that kind of a problem.
What are some ways that they're treated? I mean, what's the medication needed that is bad to have fluid on the brain and you can see him in pain? And I think back to the Indiana game.
Yeah, so first of all, we ought to just clear up the reality that most of the time, these things are found incidentally. They're found as they're looking for some other problem, they may not relate at all to symptoms, and a lot of them are not symptomatic. But when they are symptomatic, and you can pretty clearly figure out that, yeah, that's the cause of it, then you can do things to try to eliminate that pocketing of fluid. And so that necessarily, of course, is invasive, and you need to drain that cyst either by fenestrating it, or sometimes they have to put a shunt in, which is a way of removing excess fluid that builds up in the brain, or maybe a better way of saying it would be to decrease the amount of fluid somewhat in the brain, and it gets shunted actually down into the abdomen where it's absorbed. It's kind of a unique problem and a unique solution.
Dr. Doug Tavis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking about the arachnoid cyst Urban Meyer's been dealing with in turf toe with A.J. Green. Is there a better way or prescribed course of action? Because that's been the story this week.
Because it's an invasive kind of a thing to have to deal with that, if you're going to try and structurally change it, there's obviously a lot of hesitancy. You try and treat these things conservatively. So in the case of having the headaches, you know, there's a variety of things that can be done to try and treat headaches that would be, you know, very familiar with all to all the listeners, whether it's medications, trying to decrease other external causes of headaches like spasming of muscles around the neck. And I would just imagine that Meyer has done all of these things, you know, as a way of trying to avoid doing anything more aggressive with it. They monitor the cysts, looking at them on MRI, looking to see if they're growing or not growing. If they're stable in size and the symptoms are intermittent enough, then generally the best prescribed course of action is just to continue to monitor it, not try and do anything more aggressive.
Dr. Doug, thanks for the insight on this, and we'll get caught up again.
All right, Chris. Have a good rest of your week.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
One final time on your Wednesday with Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Loaded show. Derek Peterson, Greg Smith, Mike Leach, Brad Edwards today, and Shuey was in studio. And can get the show on podcast, iTunes, or HailVarsity.com. It's all free for you, and we love him. The Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke, is putting out some of the sound from today's show on the ESPN Lincoln Twitter handle. HailVarsity will have that for you as well. Full interviews and some of the greatest hits for you today. Good show today. Tomorrow, we are down in the rail yard on the balcony at the Hail Varsity offices, getting you ready for Nebraska basketball. We'll be there 4 to 6. So if you're going to go check out Nebraska Wayne State, we'll go kick it in the rail yard. We'll be down there getting ready for the show. Should be good stuff. We will get caught up with Gary Barnett tomorrow. We'll have a Wandale Robinson reaction from Greg Smith. Maybe Wandale. Brandon Vogel is going to join us, and I'm excited. Our one-on-one interview with Adrian Martinez. So that is loaded up for tomorrow. Oh yeah, Tim May from the Columbus Dispatch, Mr. Buckeye Insider, going to join us as well. So we are full up for your Thursday of college football live in the rail yard, getting you ready for Coach Miles in Nebraska basketball. We'll be there at the Hail Varsity offices 4 to 6. Danny is going as Ron Jeremy tonight. Do everyone a favor and tweet out that stash picture.
No,
it's beautiful.
I don't think so.
Do it.
I've had pictures with the stash from
some
previous
people look
years.
Creepy, like you drive a windowless van. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, but you, that's not you.
Appreciate that. That's the best compliment I've gotten with this mustache in my life, I think.
Seriously. I mean, you just...
Just got to give you the look.
See, don't do that. I take it back now. Don't give me the eyebrow raise.
See, but the thing is, the biggest fear would be if any kids come to my door asking for candy, because one, I don't have any, and two, I'll be looking like
you
this.
You don't want your kids?
The parents would be like, no, next door. But you didn't ask what I went as this past weekend, though.
Well, you went as like, what? What'd you go as?
I went as Prison Mike from The Office.
Nice.
My buddy did Date Mike. I did Prison Mike full suit, the purple bandana. He had the flat cap for Date Mike, and then the blazer look, business casual look. So we were rocking it. A lot of compliments.
Prison Mike. That's pretty good. Let's get you qualified now for Black Friday, Nebraska, Iowa, with Hail Varsity and your friends at T.O. Haas Tire.
Worse? How could they get any worse? We're at the threshold of hell!
Is this heaven?
The jolliest bunch of this side of the nut house.
Hey, you know, America.
Los Points.
Yes, they do. 466-3776, 800-825-5865, caller 8. Caller 9, qualify for Black Friday. That roadie, gas card, hotel, tickets to Iowa, Nebraska, a gift certificate from your friends at T.O. Haas Tire, a Jet Splash car wash to wash the Iowa off of your car when you cross on over back to the good life. Caller 8 and 9 qualify. We're down in the rail yard tomorrow at Hale Varsity. Talk to you then at 4.